We are going to study Genesis 24, but that's not where we're going to start. We're going to start in 1 Samuel 23. Because I'd like to begin with the however, and then proceed to our point. I do think there are many things in the Bible that we need to understand a proper balance. And I think that's true with this lesson, so I'd like to give the balance and then give the lesson. In 1 Samuel 23, David rescued the city of Keilah from the Philistines, defeated the Philistines, rescued it for the people of Judah, and that meant he and his men were inside a walled, gated city. And in 1 Samuel 23:7, when it was told Saul that David had come to Keilah, Saul said, "God has delivered him into my hand, for he shut himself in by entering a city with double gates and bars." Now, when Saul said that, well, you know, God has given him into my hand, that was not true. God had not given David into Saul's hand. In fact, it was the Lord himself that warns David to get out of town so Saul doesn't capture him. And in 1 Samuel 24, Saul went into a cave, not knowing David and his men were deeper in the cave. And in verse 4, the men of David said to him, "Behold, this is the day of which the Lord said to you, 'Behold, I am about to give your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as it seems good to you.'" They were suggesting that God was providing this situation in order for David to kill his enemy. That was not true. God was not doing that in that situation. And David's conscience bothered him when he even cut off a piece of Saul's robe and he realized that he was not supposed to disrespect God's anointed. 1 Samuel 26 and verse 8, God puts Saul and his men in a deep sleep, and David and Abishai get into the encampment of Saul and his men. And they're right there by Saul. Then Abishai said to David, 1 Samuel 26, 8, "Today God has delivered your enemy into your hand. Now therefore, please let me strike him with the spear to the ground with one stroke, and I will not strike him with the second stroke." Abishai said, "God's giving him into your hand." Now, the point I'm making in those three examples is that there are times we give God the credit, maybe I should say the blame, for something that he is not doing. It is possible for somebody to think that God is doing something, is leading or guiding them in a particular way or whatever, when that's not at all true. You might take a woman who is working in an office and she has a bad marriage to a very mean husband. And all of a sudden, you know, a new employee comes along and he's just wonderful to her and compassionate, and he's got an awful marriage. And she says, "God's giving me this new man so that I can have a good marriage." You know, it's possible for us to imagine God is behind certain things or trying to accomplish certain things that clearly are against his will. God is not doing something and not wanting to promote something that's contrary to what we know he wants in his word. So I say all that just to emphasize that thought, that it is possible to say God is behind something, that that's not what God is trying to do. That's the last I'll say about that in this lesson. I want us in this lesson to look at the other side of that, which I think is a bigger problem for most of us. We tend to not give God the credit for the things that we ought to be giving him credit for. I think about when Paul went on missionary trips and came back. In Acts 14:27, he told the church at Antioch about the things that God had done with him. And in Acts 21, verses 19 and 20, he told the Jerusalem brethren about the things that God had done through him, and they were glorifying God. You know, we have a habit sometimes of telling about the things we are accomplishing, and if anybody glorifies anyone, they glorify us. So it is very important that we give God proper glory and credit it's easy to steal that away from him. 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 11. Whoever speaks is to do so as one who is speaking the utterances of God. Whoever serves is to do so as one who is serving by the strength which God supplies, so that in all things God may be glorified through Jesus Christ, to whom belongs the glory and dominion forever and ever. Amen. When we do things that speak about what God says, and we do things in the strength that God supplies, then God is glorified, and that's where the glory belongs. And so when you look back at Acts chapter, or at Genesis chapter 24, there is a very intriguing story that I think really helps us see this point. And in Genesis 24, now Abraham was old, advanced in age, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in every way. Abraham said to his servant, the oldest of his household, who had charge of all that he owned, please place your hand under my thigh, and I will make you swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you shall not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I live, but you will go to my country and to my relatives and take a wife for my son Isaac. The servant said to him, suppose the woman is not willing to follow me to this land. Should I take your son back to the land from where you came? Then Abraham said to him, beware that you do not take my son back there. The Lord, the God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my birth, and who spoke to me and who swore to me, saying, to your descendants I will give this land, he will send his angel before you, and you will take a wife for my son from there. But if the woman is not willing to follow you, then you will be free from this my oath. Only do not take my son back there. So the servant placed his hand under the thigh of Abraham, his master, and swore to him concerning this matter. Abraham picks a servant that he had great confidence in. The servant that had had the most experience, the servant that he had already entrusted with all the affairs of his house, because he has a very important job for this servant, to pick a wife for his son Isaac. He did not want Isaac to marry a Canaanite. After all, if Isaac and his descendants are supposed to inherit the land, he must not marry someone who's destined to disinherit the land at the hand of the people of Abraham. It could frustrate God's whole program, because then they half fall under the judgment of the Canaanites. But this is a very daunting task, for one thing. Who wants to have the responsibility of choosing a wife for anyone else, let alone a wife for the son of your master? And he will be asking this woman to leave her homeland, her family, to go to a man she has never seen. She will have to be sort of a female Abraham. He was challenged to leave his family and homeland to go to a land he had never seen. And the servant wants to know, well, maybe she won't go. Could I bring Isaac back, you know, there so she could see him? He says, no, don't do that. You just obey me. The Lord will send his angel, but if she won't come, then you're relieving your responsibility. You just do what you can in that. Now, I'll tell you one thing that you can see. This is not the point of the lesson, but I think you can see that Abraham thinks it would be better to remain single than to have Isaac marry the wrong mate. But now here's the servant. He's got this big job to do. How's he going to do it? I mean, what do? You go to this place you don't even know, and you're going to find a wife for the son of your master. And you remember, Isaac was not just some son. He was the long-awaited son of promise. You know, if any son was ever a father's pride and joy, it would have been Isaac. What a job. Verse 10, then the servant took 10 camels from the camels of his master and set out with a variety of good things of his master's in his hand. And he arose and went to Mesopotamia, to the city of Nahor. He made the camels kneel down outside the city by the well of water at evening time, the time when women go out to draw water. He said, O Lord, the God of my master Abraham, please grant me success today and show loving kindness to my master Abraham. Behold, I am standing by the spring, and the daughters of the men of the city are coming out to draw water. Now may it be that the girl to whom I say, please let down your jar so that I may drink, and who answers, drink, and I will water your camels also. May she be the one whom you have appointed for your servant Isaac, and by this I will know that you have shown loving kindness to my master. Well, he knows he needs the Lord's help. He goes there to the well and he prays to God. And he sort of devises this kind of a test to kind of determine if she's the woman for Isaac or not. He's going to ask a young lady to give him water, and if she offers to water his 10 thirsty camels also, then she's the one. I think that was a pretty good test. I understand that camels can guzzle great amounts of water at one time, so that is potentially quite a job to draw water for. But it seems to me that that is an appropriate test for a son of Abraham. We looked last night at the example of Abraham's great hospitality, how he went to great lengths to provide for three strangers who turned out to be angels. It would be important for his son Isaac to marry someone who was a servant, who was hospitable, who wanted to help out some traveling stranger. So I think that's a pretty logical test, but the thing I most want you to know, he turns it over to the Lord and he says, Lord, you make her be the one who responds in this way. Well, verse 15, before he had finished speaking. You may have a translation that doesn't say that, but it will later on in the chapter if it doesn't say that here. Behold, Rebekah, who was born to Bethuel, the son of Milcah, the wife of Abraham's brother Nahor, came out with her jar on her shoulder. The girl was very beautiful, a virgin, and no man had had relations with her, and she went down to the spring and filled her jar and came up. Then the servant ran to meet her and said, please let me drink a little water from your jar. She said, drink, my lord. And she quickly lowered her jar to her hand and gave him a drink. Now when she had finished giving him a drink, she said, I will draw also for your camels until they have finished drinking. So she quickly emptied her jar into the trough and ran back to the well to draw, and she drew for all his camels. Meanwhile, the man was gazing at her in silence to know whether the Lord had made his journey successful or not. This is cool. Man, she does just what he had asked the Lord to have her do, and she runs and does it. Does that remind you of anybody? Remember Abraham last night in Genesis 18, running here and there to provide quickly the meal for these three travelers? She's a whir of activity, her performance surpassing even the most optimistic of the servant's expectations. And it was before he even finished the prayer that she was right there. It is remarkable how the Lord hears and answers prayer in ways that just go beyond our wildest imaginations. But that's, he doesn't know enough yet to know if she's the one. Do you know why he doesn't know enough yet? Remember, he's supposed to pick a wife from among his relatives. Is she really qualified in terms of the preconditions, the prerequisites, to be Isaac's wife or not? Verse 22, when the camels had finished drinking, the man took a gold ring weighing a half shekel and two bracelets for her wrists weighing 10 shekels in gold and said, whose daughter are you? You know, can't you imagine kind of a drum roll in the background? That's a really important question. And he says, please tell me, is there room for us to lodge in your father's house? She said to him, I am the daughter of Bethuel, the son of Milcah, whom she bore to Nahor. That may not mean as much to you as it perhaps could. Do you realize what she's saying? her grandmother, Milcah, was the daughter of one of Abraham's brothers, Haran, and the wife of his other brother, Nahor. This girl is a descendant of both of Abraham's brothers. You couldn't have a closer relative of all things. Again, God exceeded expectations. It goes beyond even what he had dreamed of. Bethuel, her father then, was the son of Nahor and the grandson of Haran. Wow. Verse 25, again she said to him, "We have plenty of both straw and feed and room to lodge in." And isn't this next the right response? Then the man bowed low and worshiped the Lord. He said, "Blessed be the Lord, the God of my master Abraham, who has not forsaken his loving kindness and his truth toward my master. As for me, the Lord has guided me in the way to the house of my master's brothers." Then the girl ran and told her mother's household about these things. I just appreciate the fact that as soon as this blessing comes to the servant, right there where he is, which happens to be somewhere where other people are going to see him, he bows down and praises and thanks God. He does not get so caught up in the excitement of her being of the right pedigree and her matching exactly and more the description he had given God. He's not so excited about that he forgets about who gave him that blessing. He gives the Lord immediate public thanks and credit. He prayed before he acted, and as soon as the prayer was answered, he prays again and thanks God. He lives very aware that everything is controlled by the hand of God. This is how we ought to respond. For one thing, we ought to be praying. Would we have gone back to Abraham's homeland and forgot to pray about it? Would we have been so preoccupied about, let's see, what are we going to do? What's our plan? How are we going to work this? That we wouldn't have bothered to even ask the Lord? I think sometimes we're just not even on the asking end. Do we sense our dependence on God, much less on the receiving end when God gives us the blessing? Remember those 10 lepers in Luke 17? Jesus told them to leave and they'd be healed. And just one out of the 10 returned to thank him. I've assumed, I don't know, that the other 9 were probably so excited about being healed that they couldn't wait to get home and show everybody and go back to their normal life. It's so easy for me to ask and not thank. We need to be giving God the credit he deserves. So you really appreciate this servant in this. Now look at verse 29. Now Rebekah had a brother whose name was Laban. And Laban ran outside to the man at the spring. When he saw the ring and the bracelets on his sister's wrists, and when he heard the words of Rebekah, his sister, saying, "This is what the man said to me," he went to the man, and behold, he was standing by the camels of the spring, and he said, "Come in, blessed of the Lord. Why do you stand outside, since I have prepared the house and a place for the camels?" So the man entered the house. Then Laban unloaded the camels, and he gave straw and feed to the camels, and water to wash his feet and the feet of the men who were with him. Isn't it interesting? From what we know about Laban later, Laban, Rebekah's brother, that is when he saw the ring and the bracelets and all that he rushed out to show hospitality to Abraham's servant. Laban's very much in character here. He has an eye for what we sometimes call the finer things in life. In verse 33, when food was set before him to eat, he said, "I will not eat until I have told of my business." And he said, "Speak on." So he said, "I am Abraham's servant. The Lord has greatly blessed my master, so that he has become rich, and he has given him flocks and herds and silver and gold and servants and maids and camels and donkeys. Now Sarah, my master's wife, bore a son to my master in her old age. He has given him all that he has. My master made me swear, saying, 'You shall not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites.' in whose land I live, but you shall go to my father's house and to my relatives and take a wife for my son. I said to my master, suppose the woman does not follow me. He said to me, the Lord before whom I have walked will send his angel with you to make your journey successful, and you will take a wife for my son from my relatives and from my father's house. Then you will be free from my oath when you come to my relatives, and if they do not give her to you, you will be free from my oath. So I came today to the spring and said, O Lord, the God of my master Abraham, if you will make my journey on which I go successful, behold, I'm standing by the spring, and may it be that the maiden who comes out to draw and to whom I say, please let me drink a little water from your jar, and she will say to me, you drink and I will draw for your animals also, let her be the woman whom the Lord has appointed for my master's son. Behold, before I had finished speaking in my heart, behold, Rebecca came out with her jar on her shoulder and went down to the spring and drew. And I said to her, please let me drink. She quickly lowered her jar from her shoulder and said, drink, and I will water your camels also. So I drank, and she watered the camels also. Then I asked her and said, whose daughter are you? And she said, the daughter of Bethuel, Nahor's son, whom Milcah bore to him. And I put the ring on her nose and the bracelets on her wrist. And I bowed low and worshipped the Lord and blessed the Lord, the God of my master Abraham, who had guided me in the right way to take the daughter of my master's kinsman for his son. So now if you are going to deal kindly and truly with my master, tell me. And if not, let me know that I may turn to the right hand or to the left. Don't you appreciate the fact that this servant has such a devotion to duty that he refuses to even eat a meal until he's stated his mission? After a long journey, you would assume he was hungry, but he resists gratifying his own needs, postpones his own meal, so that he can talk to the family about the request that Laban's sister, Bethuel's daughter, be allowed to return with him to marry his master's son, Isaac. He cites God as the source of Abraham's wealth. You see again how he sees the hand of God in everything. And he tells them very openly, with no hesitation, about how the Lord had been behind all this, about his prayer and about exactly how it happened, and this was exactly what he had prayed for, and God answered. He wants them to understand that this was not just his own scheme, that God was answering his prayer. Perhaps he sees this as one thing that would encourage this family to go along with their request, because they would want to follow the will of God. Well, verse 50, then Laban and Bethuel replied, the matter comes from the Lord, so we cannot speak to you bad or good. Here is Rebekah before you. Take her and go, and let her be the wife of your master's son, as the Lord has spoken. That's a good attitude. Where the Lord has indicated his will, we should not have our own opinion, particularly if it's divergent from that of the Lord. You know, there's nothing for us to say. If it's God's will, that's what ought to happen. If we had more of that attitude, it'd be so much better for us. God has already decided a lot of the questions that we puzzle over, we just do what he says. If it's his will, then it's his will, so be it. So you appreciate that attitude on their part. But listen to this in verse 52. When Abraham's servant heard their words, he bowed himself to the ground before the Lord. The servant brought out articles of silver and articles of gold and garments and gave them to Rebekah. He also gave precious things to her brother and to her mother. Then he and the men who were with him ate and drank and spent the night. When they arose in the morning, he said, send me away to my master. But her brother and her mother said, let the girl stay with us for a few days, say 10. Afterwards she may go. He said to them, do not delay me. Since the Lord has prospered my way, send me away that I may go to my master. And they said, we will call the girl and consult her wishes. Then they called Rebekah and said to her, will you go with this man? And she said, I will go. Thus they sent away their sister Rebekah and her nurse with Abraham's servant and his men. They blessed Rebekah and said to her, may you, our sister, become thousands of 10,000s, and may your descendants possess the gate of those who hate them. Then Rebekah rose with her maids, and they mounted the camels and followed the man. So the servant took Rebekah and departed. Again, you see the servant urgent in seeking the Lord's will. First of all, when Laban and Bethuel agree, verse 52, what does the servant do? He doesn't thank Laban or Bethuel. He bows low and praises God. We have way too much tendency to give the credit to men. We have way too much tendency to praise and glorify men. We really don't have any business doing that. In Acts chapter 3, when Peter and John healed the lame man, he'd been lame from birth, he'd been begging at the temple gate where everybody saw him on a daily basis, apparently. They all knew him. And Peter, through the Lord, healed him. And he began to walk and jump and leap and, you know, try out his new legs. And it attracted quite a crowd. And the first thing Peter said in Acts chapter 3 about verse 12 is, don't look at us like it was our power or piety that healed him. It's the name of Jesus. We are so quick to say, oh, you're just so good, you're just so smart, you're just so talented, you just did this and you did that and you did the other thing, giving the credit, the glory, and the focus to the man. When Peter got the glory, he turned it right back to God and he didn't receive it. We tempt our brothers and sisters to pride when we begin to glorify them and fall all over ourselves to tell them what wonderful people they are. Would it not be much better to say, I thank God for what He's doing in you and for you and through you? Isn't that the pattern we have in the Bible? So the servant doesn't glorify Laban and Bethuel, but bows before the Lord. But then when they want Rebekah to stay 10 days, you can understand that. They barely met this guy the day before. I mean, you know, Rebecca was going along, and I don't know if they ever thought she'd get married or if they had somebody in mind or how that was. But all of a sudden, this servant pops up, and the next day he's ready to take her back to this guy they've never met. But the servant does not want even a 10-day delay. God's purpose takes precedence over the family desire. You know, that's another thing we ought to think about a little bit. Can you imagine being in that situation? So often, we put family above God. Jesus talked a lot about that, and it was always in the opposite direction. Now, there's things we need to do for our family. There's responsibilities we have. But our goal is not family. Our goal is the Lord. Our goal is to glorify Him. And He takes absolute precedence. And this would have been a challenge. And I don't think Adam much wanted to be the girl's dad or brother and see her go just like that. But it's been clear in all this, this is God's purpose and God's will. It ought to be done. And it ought to be done today, regardless. And they turn to Rebecca. And what an amazing thing. She steps out on faith just as Abraham had done. What a momentous decision. What a decisive statement. She becomes the female model of Abraham right here. She's ready to go to this man she's never seen. Verse 62. Now Isaac had come from going to Beer Lahairoi, for he was living in the Negev. Isaac went out to meditate in the field toward evening, and he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, camels were coming. Rebekah lifted up her eyes, and when she saw Isaac, she dismounted from the camel. She said to the servant, "Who is that man walking in the field to meet us?" And the servant said, "He's my master." Then she took her veil and covered herself. The servant told Isaac all the things that he'd done. Then Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent, and he took Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he loved her. Thus Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. What an exciting time. You know, little different from the way we do those things. The love follows the marriage in this case. But she becomes the new Sarah, the new matriarch in some ways. And God's will has been done. But the thing I want us to see in this story, like in every story in the Bible, is that this story is much more a story about the Lord than it is about Isaac or Abraham or even the servant. This is seeing God's answer to prayer, God's action to do exceedingly abundantly beyond all that we can ask or think. This is seeing God's hand in everything and giving Him the thanks and the glory and the credit. With the howevers we began with, we can't give God too much credit for the things that He has done. We need to glorify Him and we need to see Him. And it is robbing from God when we give to ourselves or to any other man the glory, the thanks, and the credit that belongs to God. We need to see Him so much more clearly in our lives. If we did, we would be praying a lot more, asking and thanking and praising and seeing so much more our absolute dependence on Him in everything that we do. If you don't have God in your life, you have nothing. We are not able to live our lives on our own. And there may be someone in the audience tonight who's not obeyed the Lord, who really needs to turn to Him. If you've not obeyed the Lord, if you've not become His child, you're on your own. And we are facing all kinds of challenging situations that we know good and well we cannot handle on our own. If you're willing to come to the Lord tonight, we encourage you to do that while He's down.